Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. Ty Hildenbrand here. Dan Rubenstein, right on over there. SolidVerbal@gmail.com is the email address. Also, 408-VERBAL-1, still the reverb line. Still the number where you leave very entertaining messages. We're going to get to those in just a little bit. Also, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, and of course, on FanCred. Daniel Rubenstein, week 12 now in the books. How are you?
I'm doing well. I am pretty well slept, pretty well energized. When we connected before we started recording, I had Spotify's pop playlist on.
Okay, what was playing?
Flo Rida.
Okay.
Feeling good about Flo Rida. You know, didn't hit the train, which is always disappointing. Feeling good. Week 12, I would say, maybe packed with the single most exciting moments.
Yes.
Of the college football season, just in terms of drama at the end of games and singular plays and game-changing plays, whether it be in the first, second, third, or fourth quarter, there were a lot of just moments to remember.
And also Lee Corso picking USC and having his lip cut.
And stabbing his face.
By a sword, actually squirting blood on the air, which is, I have to believe, we'd have to ask Lee Fitting about this to get confirmation. I have to believe that would be a first for College Game Day.
He's hit himself with a sword, and he's been body slammed by Bill Murray within like a month.
That's
a thing for that show.
I mean, that's a lot.
That's called Buzz Tie.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. That's a lot for an older gentleman to take in.
Yep.
I saw a guy rush the field in Norman as well. He got buried.
Oh, he got leveled.
That's the best part of anyone rushing the field.
And maybe one of the better plays that's happened involving Oklahoma football in the past couple weeks.
Yeah, as they win by 38 over Iowa State at home. In actual college football news, which we'll get to here momentarily, the big story, I guess, in terms of national championship ramifications is that in the new AP poll, Baylor overtook Ohio State. Now, the AP poll doesn't factor into the BCS, mind you.
Right.
But it is significant from some standpoint that Baylor was finally now able to overtake Ohio State. The standings as they are in the AP poll, Alabama, Florida State, Baylor, and then Ohio State bringing up the rear in fourth, Dan.
Thanks, Illinois.
Just an observation. And I don't want people to take this the wrong way. Everyone takes things the wrong way nowadays.
Right.
I mean this in no negative connotation. This is really just a third-party observation.
Sure.
As you know, we get messages in the inbox. We get tweets from people who disagree with us. We get a whole multitude of messaging coming into the Solid Verbal headquarters, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the dumb comments we get, I would say at least 80% of them come from people who are self-identified as Ohio State people. I'm serious. Okay. This is serious now.
This is science. This is data.
This is data. This isn't me saying, oh, it's all Ohio State people.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Ohio State people are dumb. I just want to know why 80% of the dumb comments we get are from people who claim to be Ohio State fans. That's all.
I think it's probably just a vocal minority. I don't think Ohio State fans as a whole are the loudest, most obnoxious fan base by a mile. I just think they like the minority of them that are that vocal and oppressively annoying are very much engaged and willing to be heard.
Okay, well, that's a very politically correct answer there, Dan. Thank
you. Also, they're all dumbasses.
There you go. I went 3-1 on my locks this week. You went 0-1.
Yeah.
Chris went 0-1 as well.
Going out and missing on a lock, understandable. Things happen. On Duke? A newly ranked Duke?
I mean, that's like a dog turd in a pizza box on fire on the doorstep right there.
No, Duke is pretty good.
But it's still Duke, Dan.
It's still Duke, but this is the best Duke team since 1994. Oh. And
we all remember that 1994 team, right?
The memories I have from 94, you know, boy turning into a man with Duke football just easing me into adulthood. It happens.
It's what started our early passion for college football. Anyway, Hulu Plus is sponsoring the Reverbs here on this week 12. Let's have a listen again. 408-VERBAL-1. Here's what you guys had to say on our voicemail line.
7 wins.
this is Matt from Ann Arbor.
Hi, this is Charlie from Tucson.
Hello, this is Jonathan from Orlando.
This is Alex from Southern California.
So, Gus Johnson announcing a Baylor game. Yeah, I'm going to have to cancel my Saturday night plans.
At 11:25 Eastern Standard Time, every Ducks fan said, thank you, Trojans. Go, Ducks, go!
It's official, right? Lane Kiffin was the nadir of college football coaching.
I just want to call in and tell Dan, I hope he really appreciates Stanford's ability to get very confused about how good of a football team they are. And there really just isn't enough beer in the world for me right now, but I'm giving it a shot.
I haven't been this thankful to a Trojan since my last horrific one-night stand.
Alabama football. Our receivers hit harder than your linebackers.
Hey, Mississippi State fans, I'm not sure if this is a bad sign for your team, but ESPN just ran a promo for the game against Alabama. And for Alabama, they had a picture of A.J. McCarron. And for Mississippi State, Dan Mullen.
Georgia, Auburn, bravissimo. Brilliant.
That Georgia-Auburn game is exactly why I will never bet money on sporting events.
That was the coolest end of a football game I think I have ever seen. Did you see the play? Because I did, and I still don't believe it.
What does it take for any defensive person to knock the football down?
You can't script these kind of things, and this is why we love college football. And it's going to be a good night, Auburn, tonight.
I just died, went up to heaven. I asked God, why did he let Auburn win? And he said it was so that they could beat Alabama next week, go to the national championship, and get another win for the SEC.
All these people yelling War Eagle should really understand by now that it is so much better to be lucky than it is to be good.
Bortle.
Just got done watching J.J. Wharton for UCF make the catch of the day / year / century to beat Temple. Shame that a 16.5-point favorite needed that catch, but thank goodness my Knights keep playing down to the level of their competition so we could all witness it.
Where were you when the drive for six ended?
And the highlight of the season for me has been Tim Beckman and Bill Cubitt nearly coming to blows on the sideline.
I'm happy I turned on the opportunity to put on my Illinois gear and truck out to Memorial Stadium in November weather to watch my team get stopped by Ohio State.
Wanted to call in and help the guys count how many times Penn State had to punt against Purdue. Ready? Go. Yeah.
Took three overtimes for Michigan to beat the Northwestern, a team that everyone else in the Big Ten has beat pretty much. Man, we're bad.
Your Legends Division, at least co-champions, the Michigan State Spartans.
I'm watching Florida and South Carolina play, and it is not the bloodbath I was expecting. Huh.
As a Maryland grad, good to see Thanksgiving came a little bit early tonight. Gobble, gobble on those Hokies.
As much as this actually sounds like mocking, you don't understand how frustrating it is to get in your car at 4:05 and you're already up 28-0. And by the time you get home, the goddamn subs are already in the game.
I watched the first half of Washington State, Arizona, and I believe I have achieved a perfect fugue state of meh, M-E-H.
Hey, Charlie Weiss won a conference game. That only took 6 years.
Did the Mountaineers think they were going to come into Lawrence, Kansas and win a football game?
Then there's watching your team lose to Kansas and seeing Charlie Weiss get a Gatorade shower and start jiggling in celebration.
All right, Dan. Those are your Week 12 reverbs sponsored by Hulu Plus. You've probably tried Hulu.com before.
Of course.
Hulu Plus is so very much more. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. It lets you watch thousands of hit TV shows and movies in the living room or on the go. Just use a smartphone, a tablet, whatever. With Hulu Plus, you can watch your favorite TV shows like SNL, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Shark Tank, and, you know, a show I kind of like, Scandal. Kerry Washington, a big fan.
Are you?
Big fan.
Is it a good show? I've heard good things.
It's a pretty good show. I like it.
No, it sucks you in, apparently.
Yeah. You can also watch every episode of shows like Lost, Law & Order, SVU, Doctor Who, and Community. You can also check out exclusive content, including Hulu originals like The Wrong Mans and Behind the Mask, Hulu's new docuseries that takes you inside the world of sports mascots, which is quite interesting. You'll also get access to a collection of ad-free movies and kids content. Only $7.99 a month. Catch up on your current shows. Binge on old favorites. Catch a great movie. Stream as much as you want, wherever you want. Right now, you can try it for free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/verbal. That's a special offer for our listeners only. Make sure you use HuluPlus.com/verbal so you get that extended free trial and so that they know we sent you. Again, HuluPlus.com/verbal. Extended 2 week free trial, Dan.
I did just notice that Law & Order SVU is on Hulu and Hulu Plus. You're talking about $7.99 a month for Hargate?
Boom.
That's a deal in it. That's a lady.
Yeah.
Mariska Hargitay, $7.99 a month. You can do a lot worse than that.
Absolutely. Let's move on. Let's get to week 12. An interesting week, as you mentioned, because there were moments. There were moments that will stand out. Of those moments, Dan, I think the one that bubbles most to the surface was that crazy 73-yard desperation play.
Jeez.
With only seconds left that gave Auburn a victory over Georgia. What else stood out in your mind, though, beyond that?
Well, it was the UCF catch just in terms of singular plays. And that wasn't like that didn't set up the game winning or the game winner for UCF. But I think it was J.J. Wharton.
Yeah.
It was great play. I mean, maybe the singular most athletic play, at least from yesterday, perhaps of the season. Baylor falling behind early and then just boat racing and just destroying Texas Tech and Dallas. That was pretty incredible. And with the big plays from guys stepping up with the injuries with Baylor had Levi Norwood with his ridiculous punt return, all of that. Taj Boyd going off Thursday night, another huge night from Miles Jack Friday night, the UCLA linebacker turned running back. D'Anthony Thomas getting back into the swing of things a little bit. He had a ridiculous kick return that sort of paced a very slow, kind of disturbing, secretly fat effort from Oregon over Utah. And then it was USC and that defense, especially with all of the interceptions and just how good they played for four quarters against Stanford. And just the moment, you know, USC fans pouring out onto the field and Ed Orgeron with the sword. That sword was a very famous sword.
Yeah,
yesterday, that USC Trojan sword. So, moments like that, you're going to remember as sort of highlights and tentpole moments from the season happened yesterday. I don't know. What else stuck out to you?
Well, no, I was going to use that as my segue into the USC game because that one was one of the marquee games that was on in the evening. USC wins 22-17 over Stanford. And again, you know, not to pat anyone on the back here on the show, but only one member of the broadcasting duo had the wherewithal to see value.
You know what, Ty? You don't like to use the word hero too much.
You don't. You really don't.
But what you did in seeing this game and looking past your own hang-ups about the University of Southern California and seeing the truth, that makes you special.
The truth sets you free, Dan.
Yeah, it does. Fly. Fly, sweet Tyler, fly.
I saw value in the Trojans here, and I thought maybe that Stanford would have more difficulty against a prolific defense.
Body blow letdown.
Or maybe even a prolific offense.
Sure.
I'm trying to poke fun at Oregon, and you're not taking the bait, Dan. Come on.
No, I'm not taking the bait. No, it was a very good spot for USC to get Stanford. I mean, it was a hardly fought game, even though Stanford sort of pulled away initially and had to close it against Oregon the week before. But, you know, you're playing against a talented team for four quarters. That's going to take some out of you, at least. And USC getting them at home, looking as good as they've looked recently, and in pretty much all phases of the game, you sort of still have to question depth at certain spots and their offensive line play, but really for them to come through like they did yesterday. And you know, the big thing, did USC have any turnovers? I think they had one.
They had one.
And Stanford had three turnovers. So they win that battle, which is huge. Cody Kessler, zero picks, quite efficient through the air. They don't run the ball all that well, which makes Cody Kessler and the team's performance that much better. It's an impressive way to win. It was a very modern USC way to win with Ed Orgeron and sort of defense and sort of mushing it out. But seriously, I mean, it's a program defining win for a program that, you know, they had the Oregon win a couple of years ago, but this is a team mired in Kiffin-ness. And it was pretty fun to see as a neutral observer.
So now, are you numb to my jokes about Oregon? Are you two in the ivory tower now to not care about? I mean, Because that joke meant a lot to me, and you didn't.
I know
you didn't pay it any mind
at
all.
They finally got to play against an offense that I think their leading rusher USC's had 26 yards.
Silas Red either. Silas Red can't stay on the
Silas
field.
Red. No, I mean, as it relates to Oregon, I was rooting for USC just because it put Oregon back in the driver's seat for the Pac-12 North. But we'll get into the Oregon-Utah game. At this point, it's sort of like Oregon's really good, but probably not great because of all sorts of different reasons. And it's fun to watch all sorts of things unfolding, whether or not we saw them or not coming.
Yeah, well, and as you mentioned, USC... Look, I don't know if you want to use the word modern. I don't know what the right terminology is. To me, they just look fired up, and they look really athletic. Yeah. I've tried to watch as much USC as I can this year. It's hard being on this coast, and it was even harder being in the car all day on the way back from Penn State, which I'll talk about in a little bit when we start talking more Big Ten football. But USC looked good. They look fired up, and for a good chunk of this game, I actually had it on mute. And I love Musburger, but sometimes I like watching the game on mute just to see if I can get a feel for what's going on, a feel for the flow.
Right.
And USC looked fired up. They wanted to win that game. It was apparent 5 minutes into the football game, and they win. As you mentioned, a hard-fought win, 20-17 over Stanford. In a bigger picture, and then we'll move on to Auburn and Bama and some other schools. In a bigger picture, though, what does this mean for Eddie Orgeron? Because I saw the tweet come through that people in like Oxford, Mississippi were getting all on USC because of Eddie O. And you know, who cares about Oxford? But since he's stepped in and taken the reins, the teams look a lot better. They're winning games again.
I think, no, you're absolutely right. And I think part of it is to him empowering Clay Helton, the offensive coordinator, whereas Lane Kiffin was very much not only hands-on, he was paws and forearms and grubby everything on to that offense, which I think was why it was stagnating so much, and he was just too proud to delegate at times. So, yeah, I think the offense looks a lot better. There's a relaxation that's very clear, a looseness to USC, similar to what we saw, although they're not nearly as good, but similar to what we saw under Pete Carroll. That was a loose program. And I don't know, you know, it's, you know, people point to the little things like, oh, Ed Orgeron's letting the big guys eat treats. It's not, that doesn't matter a ton, but the comfort level and like the ability that players now have to relax a little bit and trust themselves, trust teammates when there was so much pressure and there was so the microscope was on Lane Kiffin and USC so much, especially after tumbling from that number one ranking last season. There is a certain amount of calm and fun to this program that we didn't see under Lane Kiffin. So what does it mean for Ed Orgeron moving forward? I think he's squarely an A-list candidate for this job. I don't think he's automatic. I don't think he should be discounted. I think he is squarely in the mix. And there is something to be said about knowing culture and players and recruiting the area and having all that experience. I'm not positive that Ed Orgeron is a long-term A-list answer for an A-list program that I'm sort of reluctant to see, but, you know, very curious to see how they do against UCLA in the coming weeks and what they do in their bowl game and where they end up and how focused they are and what happens with recruiting after a huge game like this. But I think he has to be considered as strongly as any other candidate because of the internal abilities that he brings.
All right, let's move on. Number 7, Auburn, with a desperation win. You know, Auburn was favored by, I believe, 3 points, 3.5, 4, somewhere in that vicinity, heading into this football game. And Georgia led very late, 38-37. It appeared they had the game well in hand as Aaron Murray led the Georgia Bulldogs down the field and was able to get a touchdown with really time waning on the clock. Auburn should have lost this football game, but won on the aforementioned 73-yard desperation play with only 25 seconds left. How would you describe this play? I did not see this play live. I've obviously seen replays by now. It was almost like a glitch in the game. The fact that the ball would bounce right to him in stride and just whoosh. There's your touchdown. We're going to win this game 43-38 and now keep our SEC West hopes alive, essentially, as they have Bama in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was 34-17 Auburn, I think, at the end of the third quarter. It went to 37-17. And it was basically Auburn's running all over Georgia. Auburn is mostly controlling Aaron Murray and the Georgia offense. And then Georgia basically crawls back, not crawls, but they thunder themselves back into this game. That's not an appropriate verb. I think they score 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. It appears that Auburn is going to fully choke this game away and choke their hopes of an SEC West title away. and they get this miracle play. Nick Marshall steps into the pocket, launches it downfield. Ricardo Lewis, who is probably second, third, fourth best receiver, he's not their A-list guy, actually outruns the throw.
Yeah.
If he weren't being guarded, if there were no Georgia defensive backs there, if Josh Harvey Clemens wasn't there tipping it away to him, he outruns this throw. That it was tipped, and it actually bails his speed and judgment of the throw out. Lands in his hands. It wobbles for a second. He runs it in for a touchdown. We've seen it with Hail Marys all over the place in the NFL and in college football this season. You don't let anybody behind you, and you spike that ball as hard as you possibly can into the ground.
Yeah.
And fundamentally speaking, it was pretty nice that Nick Marshall was no longer a Georgia defensive back
and
an Auburn quarterback because the play was made. It was ridiculous. I was watching the game here at SB Nation with Celebrity Hot Tub and Roger Sherman, and we were rolling around the floor giggling and screaming. It was a play on that level that was so rare and ridiculous, and I'm terrified that Auburn's going to get killed now by Alabama because they choked that game away like hell.
Yeah. Well, Alabama, according to Danny Sheridan, a 17-point favorite over Auburn at this juncture. Now, that could change, but again, the game being played in Auburn. We should mention this, though. Aaron Murray. Let's dust off the music. 4-15, 2 touchdowns through the air.
Yep.
Did a lot more for his team, and he's been doing so all year. If it weren't for Aaron Murray, Georgia wouldn't be nearly where it is right now. He had another great game here. You almost feel badly for him. Even after that long desperation play, he still had time left. He still drove Georgia down to the Auburn 25. They had a chance to do something else crazy in this football game. They weren't able to get it done. But all due credit to him, if he had some support around him, if everyone weren't hurt on this Georgia team, and if they did play some defense, maybe it would have been a different story.
Yeah, one of the shames of this game was Georgia not being able to stop Auburn early, especially on the ground, and they did become one-dimensional. That's how Aaron Murray ends up throwing the ball 50 times. So not doing a ton on the ground, and the story of the season for Georgia is going to be the injuries and how it affected the team everywhere and how explosive they could be on both sides of the ball. But you build a team knowing that there are going to be injuries. You build depth. You try to get as much experience depth as possible. And Auburn was better built to win this game, even though they did essentially everything they could to play a three-quarter game.
Yeah, more or less. So
Auburn
wins. They keep the train rolling. They've got Alabama in 2 weeks. And Alabama is an interesting story. A week off in between, sure. Alabama's interesting, though, because the football machine that we often discuss, the quote-unquote process that we often discuss, even it isn't immune to a good old letdown game, because that's what happened when they went on the road to Starkville, won 20-7 over Mississippi State. And if you watch this game, Mississippi State couldn't really do a whole lot on Alabama, but Alabama just looked uninspired. They looked bored, lethargic at points. They weren't able to be the same Alabama team that we've grown accustomed to seeing. McCarron turns the ball over twice. They weren't nearly as effective on third downs. TJ Yeldon was the bright spot for Alabama, but I am just interested in this from a gambling perspective, because we mentioned maybe a 17-point line in that Auburn game. I can just see it now, people looking at the Mississippi State game saying, maybe Alabama isn't impervious after all, and maybe we should throw some money behind Auburn. And I'm telling you right now, if you're one of those gambling degenerates who has access to live betting, this would be the game to watch, because this is the game, a lot of attention going to be on it. If Auburn goes out there and scores right away, that line's going to dip. That's when you get Alabama, because they're going to run Auburn off the field in 2 weeks. You heard it here first.
Yeah, it seems like that's going to be the case just because, I think Nick Marshall's a pretty good passer, but I don't know if he's the type of guy that can pick apart a defense, even though it's not an offense that asks you to do that. There are a lot of concerns all over the field. The interesting thing to me about Mississippi State, I don't think they're very good, but they've only lost to ranked teams.
Yeah.
Their losses are Oklahoma State, Auburn, LSU, South Carolina, Texas A&M, Alabama. There are a lot of decent teams that are worse than those teams. They've beaten everybody else. And that includes Alcorn State and Troy, Kentucky and Bowling Green. You would want them to beat a team, especially at home, like I don't think they've played any of these good teams at home. It's the most impossible schedule. It was at A&M, at South Carolina. It was neutral against Oklahoma State. Starkville, a tough place to play. Klanga Klanga. So I don't know that we can fully think that this is a completely down game from Alabama. They turned the ball over. They didn't convert a lot of third downs. But yes, coming after LSU, going to Starkville, it's not an ideal spot. I feel pretty good about Alabama moving forward.
Yeah.
Probably better than anybody else in the country. Let me ask you this, though, and I don't know if you were transitioning to this, and Alabama has Chattanooga next week before the Iron Bowl.
Right.
Does this game, coupled with Florida State's game against Syracuse, change how you view 1-2?
No.
Okay.
But I was going to ask you the same question, and right. I do want to transition to that. Let's get to Florida State. Let's talk a little bit about the ACC, and then I want to come back to this point. Don't let me forget it.
I will not.
Florida State wins the exact same score that they won by last week, by the way. They win again 59-3 over Syracuse. Jameis Winston, clearly unfazed, at least on the football field, by some of the reports that we heard. And who knows what happens with all that. We're not going to get into that here on the show. Only misses two passes, 19 of 21, 277 through the air and two touchdowns. Florida State was so effective in this game, Dan. They faced just four third downs all game. That's not bad. Just four all game. And they could potentially play Duke in the ACC championship because Duke did what they did to Miami. They won by 18 in a back-and-forth game until the fourth quarter when they eventually pulled away. They rushed the ball like crazy on Miami, 358 yards. Duke wins this game 48-30. They have games left against Wake Forest and North Carolina, a North Carolina team which has been a bit resurgent. If they win out, they go 10-2, and they're going to the ACC championship game. I want to know from you, my question for you was going to be, what happens now as we move forward? Let's say that Baylor wins out. Let's say that Ohio State wins out. Let's say Ohio State goes to the Big Ten championship and they beat Michigan State. It looks more and more like Michigan State in the Big Ten championship. And Florida State has Duke in the ACC championship. Does it change the computer's view of who 1-2 is? Because Bama's still probably going to be that number one team. But Florida State's strength of schedule, for better or worse, seems to be weakening by the passing week. What happens to that number two slot? Is that in any jeopardy at all?
I don't think it's in a ton of jeopardy because I think they're going to be solidly two if they keep playing like this, and you would assume so against Idaho and Florida. And you're right that the resume may let them down, especially with Miami losing to Duke and, you know, dealing with the injuries and sort of free falling in certain ways that they have with that Virginia Tech loss. ACC doesn't look all that great. Duke is a nice bright spot for an ACC that really, I mean, Syracuse has looked terrible. Wake Forest has gotten shelled. NC State has been looking particularly bad. Another bright spot, Boston College, has been improved. And Andre Williams may now be a top 3-2-1 running back in the country after his performance yesterday. So there are bright spots.
Andre Williams, by the way, from Schnecksville, Pennsylvania, right up the road.
No big deal.
I mean, it.
Local.
Love the boy.
Yeah. You're a little disappointed, especially with Florida State having scheduled Florida and three. I mean, it's just like Nevada, Bethune, Cookman, and Idaho. That's a little bit disappointing, especially in an eight-game conference schedule. That's a little bit disappointing, but that's what Ohio State has as well. And their non-conference really isn't all that better, and Baylor's isn't all that better. And I think looking at something like that is more for at-large BCS stuff. I know Florida State's the second best team in the country, even if the resume lets them down. Yeah. And I don't know that there's a team. I mean, if Ohio State really kills Michigan State in the national or in the Big Ten championship and people respond favorably to that, which I think is fair.
Sure.
And how Ohio State has looked on the sort of back end of their Big Ten schedule, there's an argument to be made, but do you think Ohio State's better than Florida State at this point?
I don't know.
No, I don't either.
You know, and the Ohio State game yesterday, I think, I don't want to say proved it. All right. Maybe it didn't prove anything, but I guess with knowledge that Ohio State is trying to blow out all of its opponents now moving forward, because it has to.
Right. Yeah.
It needs to win with style points, needs to try and influence whatever it can. With that in mind, the fact that they still gave up 35 points to Illinois to me was like a moment of, all right, maybe they deserve to be three or four and not two. The game was never in doubt. And you know,
they made it a little bit interesting. Illinois did in the second quarter, third
quarter.
Made
it interesting, sure. But Carlos Hyde is a monster game. Braxton Miller has a monster game. The game was never really that much in doubt.
Right.
For me, it was just the fact that they gave up more points than I think they wanted. That to me was a bit telling. They weren't able to win with the same style points. They win 60-35. What difference does it make? But
right.
Still, I was not overly impressed by this victory over Illinois.
What about Baylor?
The Baylor win was interesting from the standpoint that they at least had to face some adversity, being down two scores, only 9 minutes in.
Neutral site game, yeah.
Neutral site game, which we messed up in a podcast like
Oops.
3 days ago. Sorry,
with
folks.
Nobody listing it as such. Well, we look at Yahoo. Yahoo, you're terrible.
Yeah. I was interested from the standpoint that they were down 14-0 after 9 minutes and then came back to score 21 points in the final 6 minutes of the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
That shows you how explosive they are as they win in Dallas 63-34. Just another ho-hum.
Your standard 63-20 run.
Your standard 63-20 run. Yeah. Your standard 675-yard game, your standard 50% on third down. They only need to average 41 and change per game in their final four games, by the way, to break the all-time single-season points record, which is currently held by Oklahoma. So this is a Baylor team that is still really explosive. I guess I got more out of the adversity that Baylor overcame here early and their explosiveness against what I think is a better team than Illinois.
Yes.
Than what I saw out of Ohio State winning by only 25 and you know, being somewhat questionable in defense.
We should also mention without their best receiver and two of their best three running backs and a new running back, Devin Chafin, I believe it was, goes for 100 yards himself. So the depth has been interesting. The fighting against adversity, that's all very nice. Wish Baylor had played somebody early on in the season.
Yeah.
Really wish Baylor had just scheduled, I don't know, If Baylor had scheduled Iowa, or Baylor had scheduled Wazoo, or Arizona, somebody. But it's really hard to make an argument for Baylor outside of they're scoring 70 points on everybody. It'd be really fun to see them against Alabama. It's tough to just go eyeballing results without looking at a schedule. And what they do next week is their Super Bowl.
Yeah, it is.
Oklahoma State in Stillwater, that's basically without a Big 12 championship game, there's no more stylistic point than what they do against Oklahoma State at this point.
Yeah. Well, and while talking about Ohio State, I did mention Michigan State, a team that went to Nebraska, won 41-28. And I know I posted this on our Twitter account. We really should send something to Nebraska's radio announcers.
Oh, they seem so friendly.
They're very friendly out in Lincoln, no doubt. They sounded so incredibly frustrated that it made me sad.
Yeah.
I felt badly for it. Five turnovers for Nebraska, and they had their chances to win the game. That was the thing. Even though they turned the ball over five times, they still had a chance to win this game. Michigan State now two games clear of Minnesota in the Big Ten Legends. One win away, they get to the Big Ten Championship game, presumably against Ohio State, which I think would be an interesting game. I think I still favor Ohio State in that matchup just because Michigan State's offense still doesn't really sell me on anything.
Right.
But it will be inarguably the best defense that Ohio State's going to see all year. And from that standpoint, it will be interesting to see how they utilize Carlos Hyde, what they do with Braxton Miller, how effective he can be against one of the nation's preeminent defenses.
You know what? Michigan State's offense, even if they're not selling you on anything, they complete more than half of their third downs on the road against a decent Nebraska team. They don't turn the ball over. They're balancing offense. Connor Cook, I mean, it wasn't his best game. I don't think he completed half of his passes, but Jeremy Langford.
He looked good.
There is a talent to this Michigan State offense that we didn't see even earlier on in this season. Michigan State's real good, and it was a 27-21 game going into the fourth quarter. It wasn't far off from Nebraska winning this game, but they didn't just shoot themselves in the foot. They shot themselves while dropping multiple bowling balls and daggers and fireworks on their feet.
Yeah, it was tough to watch, and Nebraska fans are, I think, understandably frustrated at this point. It's a season.
Nebraska's Wile E. Coyote.
They are at this point, yeah. Man, you feel bad to say it, but that's kind of what they've turned into.
Yeah.
And we'll jump now back to Baylor in the Big 12 because Baylor, as you mentioned, has a huge game coming up this week on the road in Stillwater against Oklahoma State, an Oklahoma State team that just drilled Texas. Killed
right.
a lock for both you and I. Before this game, it had been a couple years, actually 1,800 days, 1,848 days since Texas last beat a ranked opponent at home. That was back in 2008 against Oklahoma State. And just when I thought Case McCoy looked, okay, not great, not horrible, just okay.
Right.
Three picks. It killed Texas. Killed him.
I was going to say he looked below average up to this point, and that was sort of a compliment.
Well, they lose this game by 25 points, 38-13. The winning streak is over for Texas. They didn't score a touchdown in the second half of this game. The last time that happened in a home conference game was 1999 against K-State. So clearly not an impressive...
But Ty, did they score a touchdown in the first half? Yeah, they did. Get with it.
Yeah.
Super impressed.
I'm sorry.
First half touchdown.
Sometimes you just nitpick. What can I say?
Take that, Oklahoma State. We have to be careful. Everybody has to be careful. I have to be careful. Texas beat up on a bunch of crappy teams and barely got by Iowa State and West Virginia as well. And it's one of those things with the Big 12 schedule where teams do get inflated going into November. And I think that's what we saw with Texas. And we liked the talent and the ability to bounce back and sort of run away at times from these teams.
Yeah.
But their ascent, Texas is Oregon State. Oregon State is Texas. And they played each other in the Alamo Bowl. I mentioned this on Twitter. I don't know what's so different about both of these teams other than Oregon State probably has a better quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, at this point, that's kind of what it's become. And
embarrass yourself early.
You use the term
back a little bit.
You use the term spirit animal, which I'm a big
spirit
fan
animal.
Of. Yeah, I like that.
They're each other's spirit animal.
They are.
A beaver and a cow. I mean, sure.
What could go wrong? Let's move on.
What could possibly go wrong?
Let's go to the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
Oregon wins 44-21 over the Utah Utes. Utah, according to Jeff Sagarin's latest rankings, has the toughest schedule in the nation. So this didn't help. Oregon wins pretty handily in this one. Marcus Mariota, 288 through the air, 3 touchdowns. The ground game for Oregon held to just 145 yards. What do we make of that?
We make the offensive line hasn't been good this season and really hasn't been good all year. And the electricity that they've gotten from the running back position, which they have gotten with Byron Marshall, Thomas Tyner, DeAnthony Thomas at times, has come as a result of getting those backs in space a lot of the times outside. You're not seeing this Oregon team getting a push inside, which against, you know, or with LaMichael James, with Kenyon Barner, we saw Kyle Long come in last season as a one-year player and completely obliterate a lot of interior defensive linemen. They don't have maulers on the inside of this line. They can't turn 2 yards into 7 yards anymore on inside zones. And a phrase that I like to use just in terms of life. Have you ever heard the phrase secret fat? I think I used it earlier on in the show to talk about
fat.
Oregon.
Yes.
Where like you see somebody... male, female, whatever. And they're like, oh, okay, that's who they are. You know, maybe, you know, sort of average, skinny, whatever. And then like you think more about it. Maybe you see them in some shorts and a tank top. You're like, a little bigger than I thought.
Yeah.
That's what Oregon is this year. They've got talented athletes. They've got depth all over the place. But, I mean, you saw it in the Stanford game and you're seeing it because of Marcus Mariota's injury. They're not the same team. They need him in the pocket constantly because his knee isn't at a place where he can extend plays all the time or just take off for 62 yards like he did for the first half of the season. This is a very good Oregon team. This is a top 10 Oregon team. It's this Oregon, this year's 2013 Mark Helfrich team would lose to the previous 3 or 4. I'm positive. And you know, they're talented. They're very good. They'd beat up on 97% of college football. But against a Utah team with a backup quarterback playing in Autzen, you know, their Oregon's not converting third downs. They're just not consistently moving the ball. They're not doing it in first halves anymore like we saw in previous. It's just they're very good. They're secret fat.
I'd be interested to see Oregon play Ohio State in the Rose Bowl.
I think that'd be a fun game.
I think that'd be a good game.
I don't think Ohio State's secondary is all that good, and Oregon's passing the ball better than they ever have. I think is Marcus Mariota. I think I saw this. He's the most efficient NCAA quarterback ever.
He hasn't thrown a pick yet, has he?
He has no. I'm saying career-wise, though.
It wouldn't surprise me.
With his inability to throw interceptions this season, he is the most efficient ever, or the least error-prone, something like that.
I don't know.
So that's something. I'm. I look,
so you're
I
saying
like
more
this team a lot
more efficient than Jeff Driskel.
I'm saying barely.
Okay.
And maybe it's some sort of weird math thing.
We'll have to look that up. That doesn't sound right to me. But yeah.
Who does Oregon has Arizona and Oregon State left on their schedule?
Should win those games, right? Shouldn't be a problem.
They should win those games. They're at Arizona, an Arizona team that lost to Wazoo yesterday. And they finished against Oregon State at Autzen. You would think they would take care of business in those games. They're in the driver's seat thanks to USC beating Stanford. So the Rose Bowl seems like it's a good possibility, depending on who they get in the Pac-12 championship game, should they end up there. And that should be decided this coming week, Arizona State, UCLA. It appears that that's, I mean, I think things could happen, but that seems like a de facto semifinal game.
It feels that way in Arizona State on a bit of a run in their own right. I mean, they lost the game to Notre Dame, which I still don't understand quite how that happened. But, you know, they've looked pretty good so far this year. They've got wins now in a row over Colorado, which who cares? But still, Colorado, Washington, Washington State, Utah, Oregon State on the road this coming week at UCLA, and then they close out the year against Arizona. So, you know, they haven't had a game against Oregon here. I don't know if they particularly match up that well, but it is a team that can put points on the board. They've proven that. So it would be an interesting game. I'd be interested from the standpoint of, hey, we haven't seen them play yet this year, more than right. I'd be interested from the standpoint of, oh, yeah, I think Arizona State can win that game.
And Arizona State probably should have a third loss, that Wisconsin game.
The Wisconsin game, right.
I'm not fully committing to saying, yep, Arizona State's better than Wisconsin and definitely deserve to win that game.
Fair point. But
Arizona State's very good. Arizona State, since that loss to Notre Dame, has rolled off 54, 53, 55. They get by Utah late in a weird game, but, you know, Utah's not terrible. And they pace a nice effort against Oregon State last night at home. I think Arizona State is very clearly a step and a rung below the Oregon, Stanford, and I would say USC now, certainly, level of the Pac-12. I shouldn't say that because Arizona State shelled USC.
But I think
right now.
Yeah, they were different teams back then, Dan.
And I think Arizona State's a better team probably.
I agree. I think they've both improved from that point.
Arizona State's on that same, they're in that discussion. So I suppose it's the Pac-12 is sort of a mess at the top, but I'm not confident in them in a single game like I am at this point with Oregon and Stanford.
I would agree with that.
And USC, probably.
I would agree with that. Let's move on. Let's go back to the ACC and talk a little Clemson. Clemson won on Thursday night over Georgia Tech by a 55-31 score. Mm-hmm. Taj Boyd, congratulations to him, broke the career ACC touchdown pass record previously held by NC State's Phillip Rivers. Clemson jumped out to a 20-0 lead a quarter and a half into this game, and you knew it was over. You knew it was over because Georgia Tech, even though they showed fight, they somewhat came from behind. This isn't necessarily a team built to come from behind. And Clemson just didn't stop. They did not stop. As you can see, laid 55 on the Yellow Jackets here. And again, another season that could have been for Clemson. They haven't Clemsoned themselves yet, though. I don't think they will. That loss of Florida State just really looms pretty large.
Oh, if Clemson beats South Carolina, they're going to a BCS game.
Sure.
I'm fully confident in that. As a top 10 team and then beating a top 10 team on the road, they're going to a BCS game. And the season is certainly not for naught. They're going to beat the Citadel. And South Carolina game becomes interesting with how slowly South Carolina has started and looked in certain spots. And now Jadeveon Clowney beat up and bumped and bruised. And Taj Boyd himself, you know, he has the collarbone injury late in the game. And you know, you have to worry about that a little bit, but he was magnificent in the game against Georgia Tech, spreading the ball around, testing Georgia Tech deep. We talked about that on the show, that was probably the way to beat this Yellow Jacket team. Clemson's outstanding. They're just not anywhere near as good as Florida State, which puts them in a group of like 120 other teams.
Yeah, well, Clemson, as you mentioned, does close out the year against South Carolina, the number 10 team in the country, a team that won 19-14 over Florida in kind of an ugly football game that featured Skylar Morningweg taking the reins for the Florida Gators. Went 10-13, 107 yards, one interception, didn't really dazzle. South Carolina, another one of these teams, just sort of waiting for things to happen in the SEC East. They need to keep winning. They need to keep doing what they're doing, but they need some help from Missouri to actually go anywhere. Florida, on the other hand, not going anywhere. We know that for certain. They now have six losses with a game to Florida State still on the docket. So
yeah,
it looks more and more likely like they're going to miss that bowl game. This was really a game that they needed to win if they wanted to have a shot at going to the postseason. Doesn't look like that's going to happen.
No, and it's, I mean, Florida will improve and they'll recruit well, you would assume. I'm curious to see what they do with the coaching staff, whether it's a situation where Will Muschamp cleans house. And, you know, in a desperation move, you know, they pay for somebody. Maybe our friend Spencer Hall mentioned, like, hey, West Virginia's not looking good. Dana Holgorsen, there's a major program on the East Coast that could use an offensive coordinator. If something like that were to happen, where somebody stumbles into their lap, Florida's going to be good. You know, they start their third string quarterback on the road in Columbia against a good South Carolina team. I mean, I don't know how much you can expect, but good to see fight from them at least early on.
Absolutely.
Kelvin Taylor looks like a bright spot moving forward.
He did. He had a nice game, sure.
Yeah.
What else happened? UCLA won on Friday night.
Miles Jack.
That was Friday night, right?
That was Friday night against Washington.
Yeah, over Washington. 41-31. Miles Jack, the legend continues to grow. Miles Jack, of course, the freshman linebacker. They put him in. He's a bull. 6'1", 225-ish, somewhere in that range. Four touchdowns. In this game, a game in which Keith Price went down, hurting his shoulder before halftime. They brought Siler Miles and wasn't able to get the job done for Washington. But a nice win here for UCLA. You know, another one of these games where I think we looked at it and both kind of felt like we liked Washington a little bit more. But they get the job done. They're finding ways to use Miles Jack. He's been a spark for him. So we'll see where they go now moving forward.
I like that UCLA's pillowy soft offense needed some of that defense to get going. They needed an injection of the linebacking core. God, Miles Jack runs fearlessly. And you watch other running backs, other good running backs, and they've just taken so many hits over the years that, you know, they hit the hole at certain speeds. Miles Jack is just all in on every play. And he is going to run as fast as he possibly can at any sort of sliver of space. And it's really fun to watch. UCLA looks really good. And it's a shame about Keith Price, the probable clear second best quarterback in the Pac-12. Bishop Sankey, not the greatest game. They turned the ball over early, and it really did kill this Washington team against on the road. And I mentioned Washington has not won on a college campus or in a college stadium in a year.
Yeah.
1 year since, I mean, they beat Illinois at Soldier Field, and then they lose the rest of their road games this season. And with Wazoo beating Arizona yesterday, Oregon State's not that great, but they need to beat both of those teams to not win only seven games this season.
Yeah. Seven wins, Steve. Do we play the song yet, Steve, or do we wait?
No, play that song. That's a real thing now.
We can play the seven wins season. Okay.
Seven, do it.
Seven, there it is. Seven. On the top, Dan.
On the top.
7-7-7, a big karate chop.
Wah! Ha! 7-1 Steve. He could be back.
Yeah.
That would be something.
That's a real thing. And the shame of it is they've had injury issues. I mean, you know, Keith Price has been beat up at times. But really, to not come away from Arizona State or UCLA with a win, they're improved, but sort of in the stat column, and that's it.
Yeah, well,
I'm not sure they're improved in that they have more recognizable names. Like Bishop Sankey is much more of a household name because of this season. But you need results. You need to beat a good team at a certain point.
You do.
You are a good team, and Washington just hasn't.
How about Northwestern? Should we talk about them?
we can't. I mean, look. They hold down a bad Michigan team to pretty much 6 points entire game. That Michigan gets the last, very, very last millisecond field goal to send it to overtime. So defensively, in a beat up defense, holds down a not that good Michigan team. You know what I found interesting?
What's that?
This is more of a big picture thing.
Yeah.
Devin Gardner, good quarterback, not that good quarterback. You tell me.
I don't think he's that good.
Clearly the second best quarterback in the Big Ten. And he's not that good.
He's really not that good. No.
He is not that good. Very clearly the second best quarterback in the conference.
Power rank your top three Big Ten quarterbacks.
At this point?
Yeah.
Braxton
Miller's one.
I'm looking at their stats against FBS schools and considering games that they've played and what I've seen from them.
Right.
Devin Gardner has, against FBS schools, Devin Gardner has the most yards per attempt in the Big Ten. I would say the three best quarterbacks are probably Braxton Miller, Joel Stave, and has to be Devin Gardner.
I guess you put him in there. I'm not going to put Christian Hackenberg in there quite yet.
I'm not putting Hack there. I'm not putting Trevor Siemian, no. Jake Ruddick, Nathan Shielhouse, Connor Cook, for as efficient as he's been and has, you know, led this team soundly and is not turning the ball over. I think he's thrown three picks against FBS schools. He's not throwing the ball downfield and changing the game in any meaningful way for four quarters. Nate Sudfeld, Nelson.
You could probably make a case for Kenny Guyton, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, Kenny Guyton, sure. But in terms of starting quarterbacks...
I know. I'm just saying.
Devin Gardner is the most prolific yards per attempt and the second most ratings-wise, and I don't fully put stock in the rating stat, but it's Stave, Braxton, and Devin Gardner.
Yeah.
Philip Nelson's done a nice job of winning games and putting the Gophers in a place to win. But no, that everybody else is making too many mistakes, and Gardner's leading the league in interceptions. But ugh,
yeah,
Michigan doing less with more.
Well, they won the game. They won the game in OT over Northwestern, albeit in sort of unconvincing fashion, to say the least. What else happened? Oklahoma won big over Iowa State. Wisconsin won big over Indiana.
500 yards rushing, Wisconsin.
Kansas wins over West Virginia. How about that
one?
They dumped the Gatorade on Charlie Weiss after that one.
I like that. Good for Charlie Weiss.
Blake Bortles. Getting the job done against Temple, which...
Late.
You looked at that game on paper, and it didn't look like it should even be a matchup. But somehow, some way, it was. UCF wins by 39-36.
No, they needed the last second drive. They needed big passes, and it was a nice performance, albeit Temple's terrible. But UCF really looked sort of flat in this game and came out with a nice win and kept their BCS hopes alive.
So that pretty much does it, Dan.
Anything we left out, I want to stress again that Wisconsin and Michigan State are very much underranked and are both probably top
14 teams
at this point.
Totally.
And Wisconsin is... a terrible end of that Arizona State game away from being 9-1 and going 11-1 this season. Not as good as Ohio State, but so are a lot of teams. Andre Williams has to be mentioned.
Schnecksville, PA.
600 yards rushing in two games. Goes off for 339 against NC State's. I mean, NC State's not all that good, but Andre Williams is all that good. Maryland beats Virginia Tech. So all that excitement over Virginia Tech defense against Florida State offense.
How does that happen?
Virginia Tech's not that good.
I know they're not that good, but neither is Maryland.
Or they're just terribly inconsistent, and that also makes them not that good.
I looked at the box score, and I saw that Kansas beat West Virginia.
This was a terrible early game,
Yeah, in its own right was sort of an upset. But the Maryland-Virginia Tech one, to me, just came out of left field because Maryland's really been in a bit of a slide.
On the road, Maryland.
On the road. Blacksburg, not the easiest place to play in the world, albeit that Virginia Tech is sort of up and down. But Maryland was on a three-game slide. They lost three in a row to really below-average competition. And then this. I don't know how Maryland wins the game. I never saw this coming.
They're not poorly coached, and they've been dealt problems with injuries, and they've just been inconsistent, but they're a pretty well coached team, this Maryland team, and they're now bowl eligible,
6-4,
which is a thing.
Yep.
Which is a thing. Speaking of which, by the way, Washington State, a game away from bowl eligibility, a nice road win. They're 5-5. They go to Arizona and win that game. Probably a letdown spot for Arizona after the shootout against UCLA last week, but Wazoo, a game away with who do they have left? They have Washington and Utah left. Utah coming to the Palouse. So 7-5, possibly on the table for Wazoo, which is a nice step forward. Outside of that, we mentioned, we talked about Duke and sort of bigger strokes. A very nice win, a comeback win against Miami's defense. It's terrible.
It's bad, yeah.
Miami's defense is really bad. But Duke certainly... good and even better since Anthony Boone coming back, I believe, from the broken collarbone, starting quarterback. Outside of that, Colorado, first-time Pac-12 favorites and wins.
There's a lot of pressure.
Purple bump.
Yeah. Penn State won. Let me talk about Penn State. I was up at the
game. How was your experience?
That was great. It was great to be back in State College. Did some walking out amongst the people, as we are apt to do here on the show from time to time. But great day.
They give you your privacy though.
They do. I saw some people taking pictures from afar, but I don't. You know, it's an iPhone, and they're about 100 yards away. So how good is that picture really going to be?
Sure.
But yeah, you know, was in State College. A great day, 55 degrees, unseasonably warm. That does not happen, especially in combination with the sun in mid-November at State College. So good day to be out there. Walked around downtown. Checked out all the sights and sounds, so it was good.
What were your meals there?
Stopped at the Allen Street Grill.
What is that?
Allen Street Grill is on one of the popular corners in downtown State College on College Avenue. You know, not want to say upscale dining, but a little higher brow. Well, it's not Burger King, so we went there.
State College bourgeois,
of course. Went there.
What did you order?
Got some pan-seared salmon.
Was this lunch or was this dinner?
This was dinner. This is after a long day.
You got some pan-seared salmon. We talking sauce, blackened?
Cedar plank salmon, I should say.
Cedar plank. Okay.
Excuse me, not pan-seared. You know, it makes it sound as if I'm some sort of health nut, but believe
you
me,
don't have to be a health nut to enjoy salmon.
I ate like garbage the rest of the day and decided I'd go with something a little healthier in the evening. So yeah, it was a good day. And I was thinking when you mentioned that you were listening to the Spotify pop station before going on the airwaves here. I noticed
What was your soundtrack?
Well, I didn't have a soundtrack, but I noticed that Penn State's been doing this thing where they play a lot of Kesha. A lot of Kesha in Beaver
Stadium. That doesn't surprise me.
And I'm not necessarily opposed to that.
Right.
But I was, as a returning alum who hasn't been to Beaver Stadium in 2 years, a little bit taken by the amount of Kesha.
I think that's a fair review. Do you have any drum and fife for me, Ty?
Drum and fife?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful sound. It's another week in the Pat League. False. It's a terrific week in the Pat League. If you're Georgetown, you just assume, you just take it for granted that you're going to go to Mathewson Memorial Stadium in Lewisburg, PA. Do you just assume you can do that and win?
I guess. I don't know what the thought process is there.
False. Bucknell Bison 17-7 over the Georgetown Hoyas. Hoyas dropped to 0-4 in the Pat League. Bucknell improves to 3-2 despite your naysaying, despite your anti-Bucknell agenda.
What we need to start doing is, what I need to start doing, is actually looking to see which games are going to be played in the Pat League. You can't get point spreads in these. We need to make our own.
Right.
That's what we need to do. But
locked one up last week.
Truth be told, I don't even know what these games are when we hit record until you say what they are to me. So maybe I need to put in a little extra work here on our Pat League lightning round.
Lehigh. It said the experts were wrong. The experts said, Lehigh, going to Colgate, coming out with a victory? You just stroll into Colgate?
No one strolls into Colgate.
You just go to Andy Kerr Stadium and claim it as your own?
No one can do that.
Plant a Mountain Hawk flag?
It's a house of pain.
No, absolutely not. Lehigh goes to Colgate, 3-2 Patriot League Colgate.
Yeah.
Comes out with the victory. They pace this one very nicely, 31-14. Now, Ty.
Yes.
Last week, I locked up Texas. That's on me. Yeah. That is my bad. I take responsibility. I got a little too confident. Altar of Dan erred in its ways.
The Altar of Dan burned down.
But I was feeling good about Lafayette. Again, Richard Rubenstein, Katie DeCapper connections. Lafayette hosting Fordham. Perhaps the most dominant team in New York City college football history since the Rutgers team with Ray Rice.
Clearly.
Perhaps. 10-0, winning on the road, winning at home, as most teams do when they're undefeated. Fordham going to Easton, PA. You might be saying to yourself, this game has been decided before the kickoff. And I might be saying to you, wrong. Lafayette sums up the grit, the scrappiness, the power, the leverage that has made up Leopards over the decades, nay, centuries. Lafayette comes away with a win 27-14. Wow. Big first half for the Leopards. Leopard up. Lafayette takes this game, seizing control of the Patriot League.
This is a program-defining win for the Leopards.
Program-defining win.
You don't just go to Easton, PA.
No, no, no. And I wouldn't recommend just going to Easton, PA at all.
Unless you have a reason, no.
Lafayette coming up big for me for my lock. That's a double-barrel lock, Lafayette. Should also mention Katie the Capper, embarrassing Chris the Capper.
Just ho-hum, 4-5.
Embarrassing Dan the Capper and embarrassing Ty the Capper. 72% on the season against the spread. very little doubt that she has no idea what a spread is.
By the way, I'm creeping on you.
Are you in this room?
You're 9-2. No, I'm not in the room. Okay. You're 9-2 in your locks. 9-2-1.
Yeah.
I don't know what I am, but my winning percentage is now getting uncomfortably close to you. I'm going to try and keep doing multiples per week.
There's no such thing as you and I getting uncomfortably close. It's always comfortable.
I want to start doing multiples a week, trying to catch you in terms of winning percentage.
Okay. Then I'm going to start doing multiples. I mean, if we're going with my easy call picks, I'm doing pretty well.
I shouldn't have given away the strategy. Anyway.
Yeah.
That does it pretty much for week 12. Week 13, with the exception of a few games, you know, there's the Baylor-Oklahoma State game.
Right.
There are a few others on the docket. Beyond that, it's kind of a week where you do stuff during the day and then just make sure you're back at night.
Right.
Seems like one of those to me.
Ty, we started this show speaking of pop music.
Yes.
Talked about Kesha mid-show.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yeah, please do.
I'm going to give you the top five songs in the Billboard Hot 100. I want you to recommend one to me because I don't listen to the radio.
Okay.
And I am not as abreast. All right?
Please do. Let's go.
Number five.
Yeah.
Wake Me Up, Avicii.
You know, people are high on that song. I am not a fan of that song. I cannot get into it.
Wake Me Up, exclamation.
A little too much country for my liking. And no.
Okay.
I'm out.
It's Avicii appears. That's a country act?
No, it's not a country act. He's an EDM act, and he's got some fellow by the name of Aloe Black who sings the lyrics.
Gotcha.
But I'm not into EDM, and apparently not Aloe Black either, so I'm out on that one.
Okay. I've heard this next song, Katy Perry's Roar.
Oh, God. How does a song like this get made?
It's catchy.
It's not catchy.
Of course it's catchy. You could sing it right now.
Have you listened to the lyrics of this song?
Oh, I'm not saying it's quality. I'm saying it's memorable. You could sing me this. You could sing me the hook right now without thinking about it.
Of course I could. I'm not going to. I'm not going to prove you right.
No, it's just like fast food is created by science to be delicious. There's nobody that dislikes fast food because of the flavor.
You can always find,
oh, these fries are delicious.
I'm out on Roar.
This milkshake is delicious.
I'm out on Roar.
Okay. I'm not in on Roar. I'm just making sure you know that catchy is catchy.
I get it.
Miley Cyrus, Wrecking Ball. She gets all sorts of naked in this video.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm down on Miley. You know, I was squarely in the camp of her ending up in rehab by age 20.
I don't care about any of that.
No, that was sort of like a prop bet I had with friends, and I lost.
Okay.
I still think
you're not a Miley fan.
I'm not a Miley fan. The song's okay. Okay. But I can't recommend anything Miley does.
When somebody gets real weird and has like all sorts of crazy life changes,
yeah,
I'm entertained by it. I'm good with all things Miley Cyrus. She seems like kind of a weirdo, awesome person. I don't know what it is. I'm okay with Miley.
I'm going with trash, but weirdo awesome. I could go with that too.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I think she's trolling I don't know. It's all entertaining to me. The Monster, Eminem featuring Rihanna.
Now this is more a song I can get behind.
You're behind The Monster.
Not fully. Not as much as the number one song on the top 100. But,
so you've looked at this up.
I'm looking at it now. I'm trying to be prepared here and proactive on the show.
Number one song is Royals by Lorde.
The reason I'm behind this song is because we've got a guy who's been tweeting and emailing us for the better part of the last 2 months, saying that if we had the know-how and if we had the desire to, we could very easily remix Royals and in place of Royals, put the word Bortles.
Yeah. I mean, Bortles. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, I mean, we could do that and probably get a million hits. But this song to me is definitely the one I think I'd most recommend. It's catchy. It grows on you.
All right, that's fair. So Ty's recommendation for the week, the Billboard Hot 100, is number one song.
We're making this my recommendation.
It's Ty's lock of the week.
The lock of the week is Royals by Lorde.
Yeah. Coming at you on WSVB.
Show's getting that's weird now. Time to go.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Thanks for tuning in to the Solid Verbal. SolidVerbal@gmail.com. That's the email address. Also, hit us up on Twitter, on Facebook, on FanCred. Tell your friends about the Solid Verbal. head on out to iTunes and review us. Let us know what you think. Also, before we go, don't forget that right now you can try Hulu Plus for free for 2 weeks when you go to HuluPlus.com/verbal. That is a special offer for Solid Verbal listeners. Again, HuluPlus.com/verbal. That'll get you the extended free trial and let them know that we sent you. We will be back on Wednesday to discuss more college football. We'll break down week 13 for all y'all.
Mm.
In the meantime, Mr. Rubenstein, enjoy the rest of your day over
Thank
there
you.
In what I could imagine is blustery and sort of gray New York City right now.
It is very dark. It's very gray. It's 4:15 p.m. and it sort of seems like it's nighttime, which is not my favorite thing ever. But I'm on the West Coast in like a week and a half.
There
Pretty
you go.
Excited about that.
Boom.
Thanksgiving.
All right, folks. Well, thanks again for downloading. We will catch you all in a few days. In the meantime, for that guy, Mr. Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty here in good old Eastern Pennsylvania, thanks again for tuning into the show. We'll catch you all soon. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.